So will Brett Favre go away again? Many Green Bay Packer fans want the team to let Brett Favre unretire and lead the pack once again as quarterback. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, July the 16th. During a national online poll last night following part two of Greta Van Susteren's interview with Brett Favre on her Fox News program, more than 80% of the 17,000 or so who voted wanted the Packers to allow Favre to play as the team's starting quarterback. Van Susteren, who is an Appleton native, scored the first interview with Favre since the rumors surfaced that he wanted to play again for the Packers, but then asked to be released from his contract because the Packers said they wanted to move on without him. Undoubtedly, you've heard plenty of opinion on other talk shows about whether the Packers should release Favre or trade him or bench him or start him, so we won't focus our discussion on that this hour. We're not going to focus on sports strategy and the like, but instead on why so many people don't want to let Brett Favre go. The guest that we contacted had an interesting theory, and we will wonder if you agree there's something to this. Jonathan Pollock is a history instructor at the Madison Area Technical College. He is our frequent guest on popular culture issues, and he thinks maybe we're afraid to lose another piece of Wisconsin's identity because we've lost so much in the recent past. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
All right, John, we know you're not a sports analyst, so we're not going to be talking sports this hour, but we want to talk about our culture. Sports are important to our culture here in Wisconsin, and we want to talk about those things we identify with that are leaving us, like Brett Favre. And you think maybe that's why there's so much commotion going on here, is we don't want to lose another piece of our identity.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a real kind of upheaval year for a lot of different areas of Wisconsin. I mean, you look at, Favre, of course, has symbolized the Packers for all these years. And I think at this point, people locally, at least the people I talk to, it's not that there's total support for Favre coming back. It's just people want this to be decided. You know, how do we approach this football season? Do we think of it as kind of a rebuilding year and a chance for Aaron Rodgers to step up and show his stuff? Or is it the same as it's been since like 1992, where Favre's running the Packers and things are unchanged? People just kind of want a decision because, I'd argue, there's so much that just seems so up in the air. When the Favre story started breaking a couple days ago, at least here in Madison, it shared the front page with news of the paper mill in Port Edwards shutting down. Mm-hmm. And Port Edwards is like the tip of the iceberg, that paper mill communities around Wisconsin are starting to lose their mills and have been for quite some time.
Yeah, so, little Niagara in far northeastern Wisconsin lost its paper mill just a month or so ago.
Yeah, yeah. So that's, on a local scale and kind of a statewide scale, the paper industry is a big part of what Wisconsin has been about since the late 19th century. And then you take that and you look at other industries that are leaving the state. You've got Miller has been purchased by Saab Miller. It's this international conglomerate, and I guess they're moving the headquarters out of Milwaukee to mm-hmm. Chicago. Mm-hmm. So again, Miller is, that was like one of the last kind of big breweries that had a stake in Milwaukee. Pabst is gone in all but symbolically. Schlitz is long dead.
And just yesterday, the news that the GM plant in Janesville, which was slated to close by 2012 or 2010, now GM announced yesterday it's going to be sooner than that.
Yeah. So a GM in Janesville is pulling out rapidly, and they've been making trucks there of one kind or another since, I think, 1919. And then you take the natural catastrophe on top of that. You've got the numbers of communities that are still dealing with receding floodwaters across Wisconsin. You've got the disappearance of Lake Delton.
That's something that we really lost, at least temporarily.
Yeah, that's right. That's going to take a while to bring back. And it's just this kind of, it's this very visual story. I know when I read about that, it was just like, oh, how could that happen? And so in all this uncertainty, people often, kind of rally around sports teams. I mean, in parts of the country, in Cleveland, in the city where I lived as a kid, Cleveland in the 1970s, there was really not a whole lot going on except the Browns. The Browns were huge. And people rallied around the Browns, and the Browns had, you know, insane dedicated fans like the Packers did out in a cold weather open stadium cheering their team on. And with Favre's departure in doubt, is he going? Is he staying? Is he being released? Is he being traded? All these different variables up in the air. People are just kind of saying, "Oh, enough already! There's so much that's just kind of hanging. Yeah. Can we get some kind of decision on this so we can welcome Favre back into the pack, or say, you know, bid him farewell and move on?"
That everything is unsettled. But do you think that the loss of all these either, you know, industries or icons or items, that Wisconsin is losing a piece of its cultural identity or a large part of its cultural identity?
Yeah, I mean it seems like a lot of the sort of pillars of Wisconsin are kind of moving on or changing really rapidly. The heavy industry, of course, even the dairy industry, which we didn't talk about, which the long-term trend has been that, at least in terms of the most milk produced, that California's overtaken.
That's right.
Us.
We lost the America's Dairyland moniker to California.
But even there, I mean, dairy might be an interesting example of where things could go, that at the same time that Wisconsin is losing its leadership in terms of just, you know, raw amount of milk produced, it's still blazing new trails in cheese making. The variety of cheeses made in Wisconsin is certainly much wider. There's much more, you know, there's a lot more stuff going on than when I moved here in 1990. That then it seemed like, you know, I thought, oh, I'll be this great cheese there. And I thought, oh, they're taking all this cheese and turning it into processed cheese or something. But now the cheese making has really come along. So, you know, maybe that offers some idea of how the state will
diversify. Things go, other things take their place. Yeah. Well, we wonder from you, dear listener, do you think Wisconsin is losing its cultural identity? MATC history instructor Jonathan Pollock says a lot of things important to Wisconsin's identity are changing or leaving the state, like paper mills, auto plants, dairy dominance, maybe Brett Favre again. Do you agree that these things are important to our identity, and can you point to other things that Wisconsin has lost in the recent past? Maybe you can point to other things that might make up for those lost things or items or icons. 1-800-642-1234, toll free from anywhere. We welcome your calls in Madison 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. So has Wisconsin seen the best of its glory days, or is the best yet to come? We aren't just talking about Super Bowl victories, but the industries and the images that make Wisconsin great. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 19 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, July the 16th. Is there something special about Wisconsin or in your community that isn't there anymore? Or if you wish, on a more positive note, what is there in Wisconsin still that makes us a special state? We're talking with Jonathan Pollock. He is a history instructor at the Madison Area Technical College and our frequent guest on popular culture. He says we've lost a lot of things important to Wisconsin's identity in just the past few years. Some things just this summer, like Lake Delton, like paper mills, like the GM plant. And now maybe the Packers will trade Brett Favre. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. One thing, John, that I noticed just this weekend that's gone, and it's due to the recent flooding, at least it's gone temporarily. We took a drive up to the Devil's Lake area, Baraboo, and wanted to go to Parfrees Glen, which is just this beautiful nature walk that's a wonderful, you know, wonderful nature and a wooded area that you can, with a creek that goes through it. Absolutely wonderful. And it's gone. It's closed. It got washed out. And it was just kind of sad to, you know, pull up to this barricade that says, you know, move on. It's not here anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. That is kind of surprising because you didn't hear about that one. I mean, you heard about other areas that were damaged. But yeah, that's right in the middle of it. It stands to reason.
Yeah. And there are communities like Gay's Mills is thinking of actually moving its town, I mean, because of the flood damage that happened.
Yeah. There are a few spots like that where they've been hit by a couple of floods in the last few years. And after the first one, they said, okay, we'll rebuild. And now they're looking at just vacating altogether and moving up to higher ground.
Yeah. So what does this do to us, do you think, when we see all these things? I know you're not a psychologist either, but I mean, you've talked about it and you've watched these cultural shifts and changes. What does this do to us when we see these things changing or leaving or going away?
Well, it seems to me like here again, people want some sense of decision. They either want to say, the people either want to say, all right, we're sticking with it. We don't care what happens. We'll build the levees a little higher. We'll do a better job of limiting water runoff and so forth in the case of a flood. We'll rebuild the downtown and so forth. Or people want to say, all right, that's it, scrap it, and we're going someplace else. We're going someplace where this isn't going to happen to us again. And that again is where, I mean, obviously, you know, man, a flooded city is a far graver situation than a star quarterback leaving. But it's the same kind of thing where I think the uncertainty is the worst part, is that, you know, if you know, all right, that's it, everybody, you know, pack your things, we're getting out, you can get your head around that, you can start planning for the future. If the advice is, nope, we're gonna ride this out, we're gonna rebuild and make it better, then you can plan on that. But where it's kind of the middle, maybe yeah, maybe no, that's the part where people get kind of irritated. Like, just make a decision already.
Yeah.
But yeah, in each of these, I mean, I think coming from a community that's lost a lot of its industry in Michigan, where I also lived before coming to Wisconsin, yeah, the tough part is when the big industry in question is in the process of shedding workers, or the rumor mill is flying and people are saying, oh, the company's going to be bought by so-and-so, or no, so-and-so is going to step in. Oh, no, they're not. But this other suitor's coming in. No, they're not. It's that uncertainty that's the tough part. And once you find out, okay, that's it, we're going to, you know, these operations are going to shift someplace else, and X number of workers are going to have to find something else to do, that's where people can kind of roll up their sleeves and say, all right, how are we going to cope with this and be able to move on?
Yeah. Let's go to the phones and take Jim in Brookfield. Hi, Jim, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, the gentleman just kind of said what I was talking about. All the decent middle-class jobs where dad goes to work, earns a decent living, you know, supports a family and buys a house, they're all gone. All your Delco Electronics and Alice Chalmers, Briggs & Stratton, you support a lot of people. You know, you can't build an economy with nail salons and Starbucks. And I think people are really starting to see the pinch. And it's a different world. People are getting to the point where they don't have any money. Because
yeah,
you're trying to compete with somebody making $1 an hour over in Singapore. So what do you do?
Yeah, I to a great extent, I agree with the caller that a lot of those jobs are harder to spot. As I'm on this show as kind of a representative of MATC, I can't really write off skilled manufacturing altogether. My president will be on me in a flash. But I think the big difference is that the companies that the caller mentioned, I mean, these are huge entities. These are the kind of companies that, like, built entire towns, built entire neighborhoods, that were really a force. And one of the things that I think is happening is there are still lots of manufacturing positions. There are jobs out there that require, a year or two of training beyond high school or even on the job training. It's just that the companies are smaller and they're more scattered. They're more spread out around the state. And therefore, it's not as easy to spot that definitely the era of a whole community working at like an Alice Chalmers or a Case or a GM or something like that, where it's the plant is tied into the community and the plant is this, you know, huge, huge source of jobs. That kind of situation, I think, is really fading. And the manufacturing jobs that do still exist tend to be at smaller firms.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still out there. But I think the caller is also right on that there's definitely a feeling that those jobs are going. Those jobs are a little scarcer than they were because you don't have this constant huge entity that's there that's just sort of perennial accepting workers, that you have to search a little more for those jobs and it's less visible. But yeah, that sense of, wait a minute, where do these jobs doing stuff went? Also, I mean, there's a lot of what the caller said tied up in producing something. You know, it's a very satisfying feeling to go to work and to have something to show for at the end of the day, to know that you made, even if you didn't make an entire object yourself, you know, it contributed X number of rivets, X number of bolts, X number of panels to some larger thing that you can, you know, point to that thing and you can say, I built that. And those are jobs that are, you know, that are kind of going away in a service industry. You know, in a service industry, you're kind of pushing paper around, you're sending email, you're receiving email, you're having meetings. And if, you know, someone who doesn't know you very well or one of your kids or somebody says, oh, what did you do today? You can't say, oh, let me show you over here. I built this.
You conducted a meeting. You could say I cured cancer with stem cells or a biotech industry. Isn't that where this economy is supposedly going, the knowledge economy?
Well, in some ways, but even that, I mean, even a lot of lab work, I mean, you know, once you get past the scientists who are really in charge of something like a stem cell research, and you go to the kind of jobs mm-hmm. that the caller was talking about, the jobs that don't require a PhD and a postdoc in a science, and instead would be require the training of some kind of like someone who's like a lab tech, you know, there also you can say, yeah, I'm working on this project or my lab is working on this project. But when you get it down to what did you do exactly? Well, I monitored the specimens. I did these things. Your connection to, and also the fruits of that research, as much as we talk about stem cells, the products of that are a long way off. I mean, it's still kind of theoretical. It's very introductory, exploratory stage. So it's valuable and it holds promise for the future, but as for right now, where somebody says, "Daddy, what did you do?" Yeah. You don't have that thing to point to yet.
Well, let's get some other calls. Steve in Rice Lake. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. Yeah. I think the whole thing needs to begin to take paint with a little broader brush and take a little bigger look. You know, it's just a historical thing. You know. We don't have Depression era times anymore. We don't have post World War II times. We don't have, you know, Ozzy and Harriet. We don't have Archie Bunker anymore. It's all about change. Nobody likes change. Our whole history is changing. But as far as what we're losing in Wisconsin, it's not what we're losing as much as what we were. It's all historically about what we were. When I think of the Packers, I think of Vince Lombardi. I think of the Ice Bowl. I'll think of Favre. You know, we got to save the drama. We've got to move on. You know, that's what Wisconsin is what we were all about. You know, all the things that we've made and all the famous names that have been here in the past. Yes, we're losing our jobs, you know, and they're changing to different types of jobs, and that's sad, but we have to move along, you know. And when I think of Wisconsin, I think of, you know, Harley-Davidson. I think of Briggs and all these companies that were here. And all the great jobs we had, and again, I think when I think of the Packers, I think of Lombardi, and we've been thinking about him for how many years, and we're going to continue thinking about him. So
Right. That's
my comment. I think the Favre thing, we just got to move along and let Rodgers get in there, and that's my comment.
We have to move on, too, because we have news from National Public Radio coming right up, and then we'll take more of your calls.
Yeah, I want to address that caller if possible after the break.
1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
And I knew that I would have second thoughts, and I think Mike has even made the comment that, you know, I knew Brett would go through this. I knew that he would have these second thoughts. Well, I am.
Brett Favre wants to play again, but the Packers don't want to start him. Some fans are fed up with Brett Favre, but many others want number 4 back on the field this fall, and we are talking about why. Why so many fans don't want to see Brett Favre come back as a quarterback for another team. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 6:37 on this Wednesday, July the 16th. We decided to call our frequent guest on popular culture issues, Jonathan Pollack, a history instructor at MATC, to get his take on all of the commotion over Brett Favre. And we are talking about his theory that we're in a funk, in a way, over losing so many things recently that are a part of Wisconsin's identity. Things like paper mills, the GM plant announced yesterday it's going to close sooner than expected. Farmland, America's Dairyland moniker, Lake Delton, Miller Beer, the headquarters of Miller Beer, moving from Milwaukee to Chicago. When things like these go away, do they take a little piece of all of us with them? We welcome your calls on whether you think Wisconsin is losing important icons and industries, things important to our identity. We wonder what items you think still remain or maybe are replacing them as well. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. So, John, we heard from a caller just before news time, Stephen Rice Lake, who says people just don't like change. The Packers have been with us a very, very long time. He thinks of Vince Lombardi. He thinks of the Ice Bowl. He'll think of Brett Favre, but you know, in some years, maybe he'll think of Aaron Rodgers. You know, times change, things change, and get over it.
Yeah, the caller, I thought, brought up some good points to put things in perspective. That as he was talking about the Lombardi era Pack and his memory of them. I was thinking that the Pack, like all teams, you also have the kind of down years. I was thinking of like the Lynn Dickey era Pack.
Oh, was that bad, huh?
Where they were for much of the 1980s, they were kind of an afterthought. You know, in the era when the Bears dominated the NFC and so forth. I said, oh, right, yeah, the Packers, right? Remember them? But of course, the Pack came back from that in the 90s under Favre and created this kind of second Packer dynasty. I thought that was valuable. You know. To you know, think of this other perspective both ways. And the caller also, some of the comments the caller made, I'm always grateful when you at WPR give me enough advance notice on this that I can sort of toss ideas around with friends and colleagues before I go on. And yesterday I was having lunch with a friend of mine who's a visiting professor here from England, and whose consistent theme when I have lunch with him is it cracks him up when Americans gripe about the things that we gripe about. And I think he would put the state of Wisconsin's economy in there, that he says, really, when you see how dysfunctional England is and just how so much in England has really fallen apart and how the country for decades now is trying to figure out its identity and in this changing world, he often says, you don't know how good you have it here in the States, that, he's really very impressed with the U.S. And the caller's comments that, that despite these downturns in various local economies, the U.S. is not, you know, in depression-era conditions and so forth. I thought that was definitely well taken and jibes well with stuff I've heard from other people I've talked about in the last couple days.
Stephen Madison, in this email, says, maybe if the Packers were leaving the state, then you could say Wisconsin might be losing a part of its identity. But one player? Businesses open and close all the time. New ones come along, and our cultural identity is not a snapshot. It is always changing.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the Pack, more than most, basically almost all other sports teams I can think of out there, because of their that public ownership quirk that they have, when I've seen coverage of that, when there's like they have those kind of shareholders meetings that seem like they're more symbolic than they really, you know, it's not like somebody who owns a couple of shares of the Packers is going to weigh in on a particular trade or something like that. But nonetheless, that feature of how the Packers are organized means that whatever the fortunes of the team and whichever individuals are playing for the team at any given time, they're staying in Green Bay. They're rooted there. It seems like you have to take a majority vote of people where people would say, oh, yeah, we're definitely going to move them. That's not going to happen. So, the person who emailed in had a good point on that one as well, that certainly the Pack aren't going anywhere.
I attended a family reunion on Saturday, and there was some heated political talk going on in terms of the presidential election, and differences were being made known. And I thought, I'm going to change the subject because this is getting a bit too heated. So I changed the subject to Brett Favre. And it got heated again.
It got worse.
So everybody had an opinion on it, but most people they wanted a decision to be made or whatever. But they were very troubled with the thought of Brett Favre coming back to Lambeau Field in another team's uniform, especially not the dreaded Vikings. And and then playing for seeing him play for another team was going to be heartbreaking for some of the people there. there.
Well, it'd be tough, but I can't imagine it wouldn't fire up the Packers something fierce. I mean, especially with a game at Lambeau. Good Lord, Favre would be taking his life in his hands. Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm thinking. That, you know, I'd say, you know, bring that on. Let's, you know, let's see what happens.
Back to the phones. George in Milwaukee is with us next. Hi, George.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah, I think we should finally put the nail in the coffin of the myth that Wisconsin is still a quote-unquote progressive state. Yeah, we have a progressive tradition that goes back a long time, but we really haven't been very progressive for the last several decades. Just some examples. Right now we have a Democratic governor who feels that he has to govern from the center right. We have a less progressive tax system than we once did. Our state park system now ranks far down the line. Our campaign finance system is broken with a lot of examples of political corruption. See other states like Arizona or Maine taking the lead there. We have a punitive prison system.
George, it's only an hour show.
Okay.
I'm just teasing.
Okay, you can take the prison system, you can look at affordable college education.
Yeah, so this kind of bums you out, George, that the once progressive
tradition? Yeah, I think we ought to stop thinking that we're very progressive anymore.
So we've lost our progressive reputation or tradition, John?
Yeah, well, I think the caller makes a good point. I think a lot of people out in the audience would agree with that. At the same time, one of the things I like to do in this kind of circumstance and on politics in general and in conversation, the classes I teach and so forth, is always sort of, you know, counterpunch, is figure out what's the other argument. And I think you'd also make an argument that, you know, the progressiveness of Wisconsin was never complete, you know, that we can look at, you know, at the same state that that gave birth to the La Follette family was also the home of Joe McCarthy. As the progressives were rising in power, they were always countered by the stalwarts, the other faction of the Republican mm-hmm. Party that was anti-progressive, that looked at the agencies the progressives set up, the policies they set up, and fought them at every turn, and were pretty fearsome opponents. So in some ways, I would argue that to some extent, the progressive image of Wisconsin was always kind of illusory or never quite complete. At the same time that a lot of the progressive reforms were coming in, there was a vibrant Ku Klux Klan around the state in the 1920s. There are chapters here in Madison and Racine and Kenosha, Watertown, elsewhere around the state, who were, you know, fighting this stuff tooth and nail and scoring some electoral victories now and then. So the term progressive itself, especially in its early 20th century usage, this is one of my favorite things to talk about, because when you look at it closely, it's a super flexible term. I mean, you'd have people who would say, oh, in any pressing issue of the day on like labor organizations, somebody would say, oh, well, you know, I'm a progressive, and so I believe that workers ought to have the right to form unions and bargain with management and so forth. And someone else would say, well, I'm a progressive, and I believe that unions are a horrible idea because it mm-hmm. it introduces chaos into the workplace and gives, you know, it makes it uncertain who's running the company. So the term progressive was always this kind of strange term, a strange and fascinating one. And I agree with the caller, yeah. Wisconsin has the reputation. But when you when you get closer to it and you say, all right, what exactly is progressive?
You're saying
what
it might be a false reputation.
Yeah, it's hard to pinpoint.
Yeah, we only have not even a minute before a weather break. Wisconsin used to also have that reputation of squeaky clean government, though, and now maybe not so much.
Yeah, I mean, it had the reputation. I mean, you can also go back into the 20s, into the 30s. You can find
there's all sorts of
scandals that are
going on.
Yeah,
you
know, pick up the rug a little bit and look underneath.
We like to be boastful about the positive things and forget about the negative things.
Yeah.
We're talking with Jonathan Pollock. He is history instructor at Madison Area Technical College, a frequent guest of ours on popular culture issues. And we're talking about whether or not Wisconsin is losing its cultural identity, from the prospect of Brett Favre playing in another team's uniform to paper mills closing to GM's plant closing in Janesville and other recent news things Wisconsin is losing. We welcome your examples. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Or on a more positive note, if you wish, is there something in Wisconsin that still makes us a special state? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, 12 minutes before 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, July the 16th. Coming up, presidential campaign ads are hitting the Wisconsin airwaves way ahead of schedule. Next hour, my guest and I will take a look at the latest in the presidential race and how it's playing out in Wisconsin. Right now, we're talking about Brett Favre, paper mills, and the loss of Wisconsin identity. Jonathan Pollack, our guest, history instructor at Madison Area Technical College. And our next caller is Patrick in Mequon. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air.
Hi. A comment and a question. The idea of Brett Favre leaving the Packers and not coming back, I think, is a great thing, because if we can take the focus off of a silly game where people just toss this ball around for a ridiculous amount of money and focus it on more important things, I think that would be great. But the question for your guest is, do you think that, is Brett Favre actually part of Wisconsin at all? He's not from Wisconsin. He didn't come here for the love of Wisconsin. He came here to make money. When he's talking about going to another team, he's going there for money. He's got nothing to Wisconsin. He's not part of our culture.
Well, interesting. He played for the Packers for, what, 17 years,
yeah.
though?
Yeah.
So that doesn't matter to you, Patrick, that he's been here for 17 years breaking all sorts of records and giving us all sorts of proud moments?
He was here for the money. He wasn't here for... I mean, sure, he loved the support of the fans. We've got great fans here, but he wasn't here for love of Wisconsin or the Packers. He was here for the money.
All right. What do you think, John?
Man, spoiling. people are waking up, they're listening to this, they're pouring their first cup of coffee, and they get this cold blast of reality from the last caller. No, I think the caller's got some valuable points. Obviously, on a show that's being televised on Wisconsin Eye and on a network that's dependent on subscriber contributions, I'm going to have to disagree with caller about the pack playing a silly game. And so forth, but Favre is part of Wisconsin. There's someone else I was talking to yesterday who raised that point, who said, "Yeah, sure, he's part of Wisconsin. He's never lived here. After the season ends, he goes back home to Mississippi. He's never been, he's never been shy about that. He's been very upfront that he wants to, stay where he grew up and live down there." And just now, the clip you played maybe a break or two ago, where it was Favre talking about his situation. I was thinking again about how kind of funny that is, that this sort of visible symbol of Wisconsin is, has this deep Mississippi accent.
Mm-hmm.
Wisconsin has its own very distinctive accent, and Favre doesn't have it, and made no effort to pick it up. The caller raises some good points. That certainly one of the criticisms of Favre personally I've heard over this, over this kind of is he or isn't he issue. Is that now it's obvious, oh yeah, he was here for the money all along. And where before, Favre just seemed to be, very glad to play the game, and as the caller pointed out, loving the fans, really liking playing in Lambeau in January and so forth, and standing up to the cold weather, that the fact that he has this kind of retirement, and then, oh, nope, not so fast, I want to come back and play some more, makes it look like, oh, wait a minute, it was about the money all along. At the same time, going back to what some of the previous callers have said about the different pace of modern life, in some ways, Brett Favre is really a symbol for lots of us. I'm in Wisconsin for a job, as I mentioned earlier in the show and talked about previously. I didn't grow up here and came here for school and then found a job here. And there are lots of other people I can think of where that's the same thing, that it's a broader sort of trend in the American economy that fewer people are able to stay in the communities that they grow up in, and especially as jobs become more professional and you need more skills, you get these skills and you look in your own community. If there's nothing there, you go where the job is and you work that job for a while, and when it doesn't work out there, you go someplace else. What's remarkable in some ways about Favre in the modern NFL is that he spent, aside from the first season of his career where he rode the bench for the Falcons, he spent his whole career in Wisconsin, which is almost unheard of.
And I don't know if you have to be born and bred in Wisconsin to, make a mark on Wisconsin be a part of something important to Wisconsin. And there are those of us who are Wisconsin born and bred. Can you tell from my accent, John?
I guessed, possibly.
Yes. I'm proud of it. John in Pewaukee is with us next. Hi, John.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
I had a comment regarding, first of all, I love Brett Favre. My whole family does. My 82-year-old mother screams when he gets tackled. But in Wisconsin, we've got, as well as the rest of the country, we have a problem with invasive species and habitat loss. And especially in Wisconsin right now, we've got garlic mustard, purple loosestrife, a species of cacti that's threatening wetlands. I understand the mussels in the Mississippi are endangered because of zebra mussels. I think that although Brett is an icon, we should put, you know, our love for Brett in perspective of some things that are important for the future. And these invasive species don't even seem to be taught in the schools. It's like ecology is taking a back seat, and everybody knows Brett Favre, but we don't know about some big challenges that are facing our country and the state of Wisconsin, and just one of those is invasive species. So if you could comment on that juxtaposition, I'll take my comments off here.
John, thanks so much for calling. And I'm just going to piggyback on those comments that we did a poll with St. Norbert College in the spring. What's the best thing about Wisconsin? And it was Wisconsin's scenic beauty and our out-of-doors and our environment, and that was the best thing about Wisconsin. Yet we have a lot of threats to that environment, like John says, invasive species. I just thought the other day about beach closings here in Madison because of toxic green-blue algae, and it's it doesn't seem like it was when I was a kid, that you have all sorts of, I guess there have been some bad water pollution situations back when I was a kid too, but there are some threats to the environment.
Yeah, the invasive species. I'll say this: that was a juxtaposition I hadn't really thought of. And at first, as the caller was talking about it, I was kind of like, "How did we get there?" But no, as he went on, that's really a great point. Because if we're talking about Wisconsin's identity, to talk about river and lake ecosystems and plants that are native to the state under threat, that's, you're looking at Wisconsin's identity on this whole biological level. It's a much deeper connection, than talking about economic factors or certainly talking about the players on a particular sports team. I think that's a great parallel, to look at the zebra mussels coming in. There's this a carp that's swimming up the Mississippi River.
The one that goes flying out of the...
The carp that's rocking out of the water. So you read about feral pigs that are showing up in southwest Wisconsin. Invasive species in the plant and animal kingdoms are an important part of the story, and for people who are very close to nature, it sounded like the caller was maybe out in a boat. I heard water sloshing around.
He's not. He hung up anyway.
Oh, okay. So. that's something they're going to run into quite a bit, and is going to be again a factor in Wisconsin's changing identity, not necessarily for the better.
Well, here's one an email from Catherine in Blue River, who says, Wisconsin is gaining new things, too. For example, Wisconsin hosts the Midwest Renewable Energy Fair every year. That's been going on for a while. And we have the largest concentration of organic farms per capita. So there's some positive things on the horizon, too, right, John?
Yeah, well, organic farming, definitely in agriculture, kind of like I think I mentioned briefly about the cheese earlier. That's another
Kraft cheeses.
That seems to be a huge niche that people are going into. That I know maybe 15 years ago, people were lamenting Wisconsin farms, and they said, oh, they're small, and they can't really compete with bigger operations out in California and elsewhere in the West. And the way that a lot of farmers have been able to do that is to sort of retool as organic farms, where you can charge a premium for your produce therefore make a smaller acreage more profitable. That part of agriculture shows a great deal of resilience. And again, a way that, as several callers have pointed out, that changes aren't necessarily bad, and that you can, after some restructuring, come out in a stronger place than you were before.
You know, while the big brewers are moving out of Milwaukee, or the headquarters anyway, and going to Chicago, and all that big boy consolidation is going on, the small craft beers are really doing well in Wisconsin too.
Yeah, that seems like the one big segment of the beer industry that's really growing. So right, that's another. Yeah, it seems like almost every town now has a brew pub or has a little brewery, and they're putting stuff out. So another example of the identity changing.
So what's your analysis? Is Brett Favre going to stay, or is he going to go?
I kind of hope he goes. I just the other thing there, context we didn't talk about yet, and you mentioned there's another show talking about sports. It's like the Michael Jordan factor. Remember when Jordan was retiring and he'd come back and he wasn't quite as good each time and he couldn't bear to leave? I mean, the idea of Favre going out on top, I think that's a great image, and the image in contrast, Favre coming out and getting injured his first game and being on the DL for the whole season, or throwing an insane number of interceptions or something like that.
He's not going to do that. I'm just kidding. If you want to talk more sports, Ben Marins will be talking with a sports reporter about the saga involving Brett Favre at 5 o'clock this afternoon. So you can tune in for At Issue with Ben Marins after 5 for more talk about Brett Favre. John, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for inviting me, Joy.
Jonathan Pollock, history instructor at Madison Area Technical College and our frequent guest on popular culture issues. I'm Joy Cardine. Thanks to Rob Ferret, Karen Prager, and Cynthia Schuster for producing the hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.